Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to update a story that I've been following for a couple of years now, namely the German corporate control over American publishing. Now, as I've said so many times on so many different programs, whenever one is looking at a major German corporation, one should never forget about the deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization. That is literally the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground, and as one banker described it in correspondence with Paul Manning, the author of the definitive text about the Bormann Group, it is the most important concentration of money power under a single control in history. And the steps that led to that control or led to that compilation of money power are described in, among other programs, Connecting the Dots, Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, which talk about the Bormann Group as the culmination of five of the major capital flows of the 20th century. And one of the major German corporations that is involved with American publishing, and frankly a corporation which controls American publishing, is a company called Bertelsmann. That's Bertelsmann. I've spoken about that in a pair of half-hour segments, For the Record segment 122 and two pairs of half-hour segments, FTR 122 and 123. It's brought up to date again in For the Record segment 135 and also in the first half of For the Record segment 152. There's also discussion of Bertelsmann's purchase of Random House Incorporated in German corporate acquisitions in the United States. Bertelsmann had already owned Bantam Doubleday Dell, which made it a major force in American publishing. They then purchased Random House Incorporated, which in 1996, the year before they purchased it, had more than double the... Actually, it might be 1997. In any event, whichever of those 2 years was the year before it was purchased, Random House Incorporated had more than double the sales volume of the nearest English-language publisher. This added to the already formidable Bantam Doubleday Dell. And in conjunction with that, one should bear in mind that the George von Holtzbrinck firm also is a major force in American publishing. Both organizations, like all major German corporations, ultimately report to the Bormann Group. According to Paul Manning's last work in an Israeli publication called Monitin, now headed up not by Martin Bormann himself, but by his son Adolf Martin Bormann and his daughter Naomi. Bertelsmann is the third largest corporation, media corporation in the world, and is heavily involved with music as well as with the publishing industry. Bear in mind that one of the things we spoke about in For the Record segment 123, aside from the numerous Third Reich ties to Bertelsmann and the role of Reinhard Mohn, a member of an elite Luftwaffe division, and his anointing of Dieter Vogel to become the head of the very powerful Thyssen Group, one of the major elements in not only German heavy industry, but also the Bormann Group. One of the things to bear in mind is that Heinrich Mohn, the fellow who headed up Bertelsmann when Hitler was in power, was SS, basically a, quote, honorary, unquote, member of the SS, which no doubt meant that he was too old to have grown into the SS from the Hitler Youth on up, so he was made an honorary member of the SS for his services to that organization. Bertelsmann was the largest publisher of books for both the Wehrmacht and the SS. So when you hear the name Bertelsmann, tell yourself SS, and we will be, time permitting, coming back to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk that I've cited many times later on in this program, again, time permitting. Bear in mind, again, the SS affiliation of Heinrich Mohn, the main figure, and the father of Reinhard Mohn, who just resigned as the head of Bertelsmann. He's Reinhard Mohn is 85. An article about the profound influence of Bertelsmann in the music industry was carried in the Los Angeles Times of Friday, October 22nd of 1999. This is an article by Chuck Phillips. It's entitled The Biz, this particular article. It's about the music business. And this is about a dispute which threatens the sales charts of Bertelsmann's music group, or BMG, as it is called. Bertelsmann is also a major publisher of music as well. This article describes some of the major acts and labels controlled by Bertelsmann. Bear in mind, in a pair of half-hour segments entitled Hearts and Minds, I discussed Bertelsmann's ownership of RCA as well as Arista Records. That is by no means all they control. Again, from the LA Times of Friday, 10/22/99, an article by Chuck Phillips on the front page of the business section entitled Zomba Dispute Sounds a Sour Note at BMG. And the article reads in part as follows. BMG rules the sales chart this week with the top six best-selling albums in the nation, but the German conglomerate could quickly plunge to last place if a key affiliate, Zomba Group, breaks away in June as expected. BMG distributes the records produced by Zomba, and losing the label would cost BMG nearly a third of its 15% share in the U.S. market, not to mention three of its biggest pop stars, Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, and NSYNC. And more about some of the musical properties owned by Bertelsmann. And again, when you think Bertelsmann, think of Heinrich Mohn and his SS affiliation, and think of the Bormann Group, and think of the Serpent's Walk book that I will touch on later. Skipping down on this article, this is the Zelnick referred to as Strauss Zelnick, BMG's global record chief. In Zelnick's case, three of BMG's top six acts this week, Spears, Backstreet Boys, and Creed, are signed with Zomba and Windup, independents whose deals soon expire. Santana's number one album was delivered by BMG's Arista division, which is run by industry veteran Clive Davis, who preceded Zelnick's arrival at the company and runs his label autonomously. Needless to say, when I speak of Heinrich Mohn and his SS affiliation, this does not in any way apply to the artists described here, but rather the economic power that they embody and that they represent is to be thought of as belonging to an SS-affiliated organization. That's the significance here. More about some of the artists and labels controlled by BMG, skipping down. That is not to say that BMG's fortunes have not improved since Zelnick arrived 5 years ago. Sources inside BMG credit the former TV and movie executive with streamlining its once bloated U.S. division, spearheading its internet strategy, and restructuring its record club, RCA, and Windham Hill labels. Windham Hill at least used to be based right down the road in Palo Alto. They also are controlled by BMG and Bertelsmann. Still more about labels and artists partially controlled by BMG. The Calder here is a fellow who is one of the individuals with whom BMG is now having a dispute. This is a fellow named Clive Calder, or Clive Calder, C-A-L-D-E-R. Calder joined BMG in the early 90s and sold the German conglomerate 20% of the U.S. arm of his Jive label, home to such stars as Spears, Backstreet Boys, R. Kelly, and Too Short, and 25% of his Zomba music publishing company, home to such acts as Macy Gray, Korn, and Limp Bizkit. BMG derives no income from Zomba music sold outside the U.S., where Calder has created his own independent global distribution network. And I'm not familiar with the music of any of these artists. In fact, I'd never heard of some of them, a few of them I'd heard of. But I don't want to be misunderstood as implying that these people are in any way Nazis or affiliated with the SS. But again, that's a tremendous amount of economic power in the music industry. And bear in mind, whenever you think of Bertelsmann, think of Heinrich Mohn and SS. Think of the Bormann Group and the Serpent's Walk scenario that I've advanced so many times. There's a very disturbing article in the Nation magazine's issue of November 8th of 1999. It's also up on the Nation's website, which is thenation.com. That's T-H-E-N-A-T-I-O-N, one word, .com. And this is an article by Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman, who authored an article in the December 28th issue of The Nation, December 28th, 1998 issue of The Nation, that discussed Heinrich Mohn's, quote, honorary, unquote, membership in the SS, and in general discussed the virulent Nazi past of this corporation. They did not mention the Bormann Group. That's something comparatively few people know about, but with the strong connections between Thyssen AG and the Bertelsmann Group, and with the SS affiliation of Heinrich Mohn, and some of the other material we're about to relate, I think the certainty of a connection, a strong connection, a fundamental connection between Bertelsmann and the Bormann Group is something that people can put in the bank, so to speak. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This, again, is from the Nation's issue of November 8th of 1999. It can also be found on their website at thenation.com. By Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman. It's entitled Bertelsmann's Revisionist, and it's about a fellow named Dirk Bovendam, and that's Bovendam. And just who he is and the role he has played with Bertelsmann will become very clear. I want to stress as we relate, courtesy of Messrs. Fischler and Friedman, as we relate some of the titles and some of the obvious revisionist history that Bob and Dom has been engaging in, note the dates of his publications, because he has continued to write virulently pro-Nazi revisionism right up into the 1990s, and that overlaps his employment by Bertelsmann. This article reads, "On October 30th in Atlanta, the Anti-Defamation League, self-described as the world's leading organization against anti-Semitism, will honor the Bertelsmann Foundation. The foundation, which is closely linked to Bertelsmann AG, the global media empire and owner of Random House, Bantam Doubleday Dell, and others, will receive an award from the ADL's International, A World of Difference Institute. The award will specifically recognize Reinhard Mohn, the founder of the foundation, as well as a member of the founding family of the Bertelsmann firm. It is surprising that the ADL should so honor Bertelsmann at this time. Contrary to the company's official history, Bertelsmann cooperated with the Nazis in the late 30s and early 40s, publishing a range of Hitlerian propaganda. See Hersch Fischler and John Friedman, Bertelsmann's Nazi Past, December 28, 1998. Current Bertelsmann activities raise more disturbing questions." By the way, before we get to the current activities of Bertelsmann and the very disturbing questions that they do indeed raise, bear in mind something that I noted in For the Record segments 122 and 123, namely that as the Nazis and the Third Reich prepared to go underground, as their military defeat on the battlefield approached, they were very careful to give anti-Nazi or ostensible anti-Nazi pedigrees to all of the individuals and institutions that they planned on having as major operatives in the post-World War II underground Reich. That appears to have gone for Bertelsmann as well as for the some of the other companies that the other companies involved with the Bormann Group. So bear in mind that the ostensible Bertelsmann opposition to Nazism and the Third Reich is not only not true, but is to be expected for any institution or individual that was to play an important part in the post-World War II underground Reich that I've spoken about. Back to this article, Bertelsmann's Revisionist, from the November 8, 1999 issue of The Nation. In 1980, Bertelsmann's Stern magazine published poems and illustrations supposedly written and drawn by Hitler during World War I under the title Rhymes by Private First Class H. Dirk Bavendam, B-A-V-E-N-D-A-M-M, a 61-year-old German historian who had been instrumental in helping Stern obtain the material, wrote an accompanying article noting that the poems and drawings show Hitler as an ordinary soldier. In one illustration, a German soldier gently holds a baby. In another, a soldier helps a mother lying in bed while a baby nestles in a cradle. Subsequently, the poems and drawings were determined to be forgeries. Later, Mohn gave the green light to a Bertelsmann division to purchase the Hitler diaries by the same forger, which also showed a milder Hitler. They were published in Stern in 1983. Bavendam's career was not affected. His book, Roosevelt's Way to War, was published in 1983. Note this, by the way, this book was published in 1983, entitled Roosevelt's Way to War. Rewriting history, he stated that Roosevelt, not Hitler, had caused World War II. He also wrote that American Jews, quote, controlled most of the media, unquote, and he can claim they gave a false picture of Hitler. Did the book impress Mohn, then the majority shareholder of Bertelsmann? The firm hired Bavendam as its house historian, and in 1984, by the way, this is well after Stern magazine publishing poems by Hitler, which gave a nice fuzzy, soft glow to the personality of Hitler, and also after the notorious Hitler diaries were published by Stern, which also portrayed a milder Hitler, and also after the book Roosevelt's Way to War that blamed World War II on Roosevelt and said that American Jews controlled the media and that they gave a false picture of Hitler. After this, Bertelsmann hired Bavendam, as its house historian, beginning again with this last section. The firm hired Bavendam as its house historian, and in 1984 he completed an historical study, 150 years of Bertelsmann, the founders and their time, with a foreword by Mohn. A year later, Bob and Dom edited the firm's official history, which set forth the untrue story that the firm had resisted the Nazis and had been closed down by them. Mohn also asked Bob and Dom to write the authorized history of the Mohn family, spelled M-O-H-N, published in 1986 under the title Bertelsmann, Mohn, and Skippel, or Sipple, S-C-I-P-P-E-L, Three Families, One Company. In a second book, Roosevelt's War, published in 1993, reissued in 1998, Bob and Dom accuses the U.S. president of enacting a plan to start World War II. In the same book, he suggests that Hitler's threats in early 1939 against European Jewry were a reaction to Roosevelt's strategy against Germany. Again, this was published in 1993 and reissued in 1998. Continuing. And that, by the way, this another book blaming World War II on Roosevelt and suggesting that Hitler's threats in early 1939 against the Jews were simply a reaction to Roosevelt's plotting against Germany. Continuing with this article. After the revelations about Bertelsmann's Nazi past appeared, the company announced that it had asked, quote, the historian and publicist Dr. Dirk Bovendam to look at the new information and begin to reinvestigate the role the publishing house played in those days, unquote, and defended his work. This is a most recent defense. It also set up an independent commission to investigate Bertelsmann's World War II activities. The commission, chaired by Saul Friedlander, a history professor at UCLA, insisted that it could not continue unless Bob and Dom departed. Professor Friedlander said that he had read some of Bob and Dom's work, but he declined to categorize it. He noted that his objection was procedural rather than based on content. Quote, we asked very firmly that we should be the only research entity, and Bertelsmann accepted our request immediately, unquote, he said. Bob and Dom said in an interview that he could not, quote, remember exactly, unquote, what his role had been in the publication of the fake Hitler poems and drawings. Discussing Roosevelt and Hitler, he described his views as, quote, nonconformist and independent, unquote. He added, again quoting, all the world is under the impression that Hitler was in the main responsible for the outbreak of World War II. But I see it in a bigger framework of the United States moving to the status of a superpower, unquote. In other words, he's blaming World War II on Roosevelt and the United States, as he has done in two different titles. That did not deter Bertelsmann in any way from hiring him to clean up their historical past, or attempt to clean up their historical past. Continuing. A spokesperson for Bertelsmann said Bovendam is not now employed by Bertelsmann or any related entity, and that his affiliation with the firm, quote, ended with the formation of the Independent Historical Commission, unquote. That would be within the last year, basically. Continuing, the spokesperson described the corporate history Bob and Dom wrote as, quote, never intended to be a definitive scholarly corporate history of the company, unquote. Carol Stern LaRosa, head of the ADL's A World of Difference Institute, admitted there was, quote, soul-searching, unquote, about the award. I would think there ought to be a whole lot more than just soul-searching. And in particular, you'd think ADL would be a lot more self-conscious after having been involved in the spying scandal in this country in the early 90s. And yours truly was among the targets of that particular spying scandal. And so I think that perhaps ADL would need to do a little more soul-searching under the circumstances in terms of some of the people they're targeting, and in terms of some of the people that they're willing to honor. However, such is the road to ruin, as they say. Continuing, they're beginning again with this section. Carol Stern LaRosa, head of the ADL's A World of Difference Institute, admitted there was soul-searching, unquote, about the award. Although the Bertelsmann Foundation donated about $1 million to the ADL for projects in Germany to promote democracy, human rights, and tolerance, she noted, quote, it is their moral commitment we are honoring, unquote. She also pointed out that the award recognizes the current programs and leadership of the Bertelsmann Foundation and not the past activities of the company. Yet it is highly ironic that at the same ADL conference where the Bertelsmann Foundation is scheduled to receive its award, Emory University professor Deborah Lipstadt, L-I-P-S-T-A-D-T, will address the group on, quote, the ever-growing danger of Holocaust revisionism, unquote. In any case, the Friedlander Commission should widen the scope of its investigations of Bertelsmann to bring it closer to the present, and Bertelsmann should immediately permit independent researchers into the company's archives. This, again, is by Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman. It's in the November 8, 1999 issue of The Nation. Hirsch Fischler is described as a sociologist and investigative journalist who writes on the history and the German media. John Friedman is a journalist who specializes in culture and politics, and the investigative fund of The Nation Institute provided research assistance for this article entitled, again, Bertelsmann's Revisionist. I have spoken in the past about the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk. We're going to touch on that again very briefly. Serpent's Walk is put out by National Vanguard Books. Many of you have heard me speak about this before, but for people who are tuned in for the first time, National Vanguard Books is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic Nazi group. It has published the relatively well-known Turner Diaries, which was the blueprint for the Order Nazi group in the 1980s, and also for the people who associated with Timothy McVeigh and company in the Oklahoma City bombing. In addition to the Turner Diaries, they also publish a book called Hunter, about a Nazi assassin who kills people of color and interracial couples. And they also publish the book Serpent's Walk, authored by someone who writes under the name of Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L. This book is copyright 1991 by National Vanguard Books. It's ISBN number 0-937944-05-X. And what this book is about is described in part on the back cover. People have heard me read this before. The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. By the way, before I get onto this next section, this section here, it sounds, people have heard me read this before, sounds rather like what Pat Buchanan is saying these days, isn't it, as I speak in late October of 1999, beginning again, or resuming with this back cover. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality. Again, people have heard me read that passage before, and the book it basically is about the SS taking over the United States after infiltrating the army and buying into the American opinion-forming media and changing American public opinion. Then after an attack by genetically engineered microorganisms of ostensibly Russian origin, which wipes out much of the population of the U.S., including most of the people in cities and most of the people on the coasts, it kills the president and vice president, the Speaker of the House, who's a Nazi ally, then invites the underground Reich into a governing coalition, and they take over the country. But the key to this is buying into the American opinion-forming media and changing the image of the Third Reich. After a discussion that I've read in numerous programs that basically describes the Bormann organization that I've alluded to so many times before, there is this passage in a conversation about two of the Nazi faithful. One is a guy named Rentsch, and another is a mercenary named Lessing, who eventually is won over to the Nazi cause. And Rentsch tells Lessing, quote, "About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, with bands and trumpets or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around, too. Not much, but a little so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats, lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans, and we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes. Give it time. Aside from the media, we've been buying up private schools, and helping some public ones through philanthropic foundations, and working on the churches, and the born-agains. And it's in this context, as I've said so many times before, I do not think that that book is the novel it purports to be. I think, like the Turner Diaries, it's a blueprint and a manifesto, and is what is going on today. And bear in mind, with regard to the Bormann Group, that it controls the major German corporations, and they operate in concert as part of an organized political and military strategy. In FTR's 122 and 123, I described the von Holtzbrinck firm. Among the many English-language publishing outfits that they control is St. Martin's, and that has recently come into public view with regard to a biography of George W. Bush, the odds-on favorite to get the Republican nomination, which alleged an arrest for cocaine use in 1972. It then turned out that the author, one J.H. Hatfield, had a criminal record and had apparently attempted to kill a boss with a car bomb, at least according to official reportage. The New York Times of Wednesday, October 27th of 1999, described this book and described the editor of the editor-in-chief, the head of St. Martin's, resigning over this particular biography. I've spoken in the past about the Bush family's connections to the Underground Reich, the progenitors of George Herbert Walker and George W. Bush had companies that were deeply involved with the Third Reich, and George Herbert Walker Bush is very close to the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Section. It's interesting to watch this particular biography. It'll be interesting to see if it winds up putting the whammy on the George W. cocaine story, because, as some have noted, journalists are kind of like blackbirds. They light together on a wire and they all fly away together. It'll be interesting to see if this highly secretive biography keeps people away from the George W. cocaine story and then contributes to his election. We've spoken about allegations that George W. was involved in a DEA sting, picking up kilos of cocaine in the past in some of our conversations with Mike Rupert. This from the New York Times of 10/27/99 is an article by Doreen Carvajal, C-A-R-V-A-J-A-L, entitled "Editor Quits Amid Turmoil Surrounding Book on Bush." The editor-in-chief of St. Martin's Press abruptly resigned from the company yesterday in another sign of continuing turmoil at the New York publishing house after its cancellation of a biography of Governor George W. Bush of Texas by an author with a criminal record. Skipping down. Former and current employees at St. Martin said it was entirely plausible that the editor-in-chief had not been informed early in the process about the book, which was considered so secret at the company that St. Martin's sales representatives referred to the title by the code MJ. The Bush biography was acquired, edited, and published by Mr. Dunn's imprint, a separate line of books with its own logo that is distinct from the St. Martin's brand. And Mr. Wallace, Robert Wallace, claims that he never knew about this particular book. Skipping down, St. Martin's Press is part of Verlagsgruppe George von Holtzbrinck, a German media conglomerate based in Stuttgart. And this indicates the extent to which the publishers, among other media corporations, influence public opinion. And again, with connections of the Bush family to what I've termed the Underground Reich, it'll be interesting to see whether this spurious biography keeps journalists away from the allegations of cocaine purchase on camera by George W. Bush, thereby contributing to his election. That'll be an interesting, it's what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.